Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I have with me today a returning guest, real good friend of mine, my financial advisor, and I bring him on with the intention of giving you guys the value that he's given me, turned me on to the education of knowing finances, taxes, planning, wills, life insurance, all that shit that it's important for you guys to know, and I think you'll be thankful by the time we get done with this program today, listening to this episode, because it's going to help you have a better life overall and prepare for the future. And Jeremy and his team will actually be at the Street Cop Conference 2023, April 23rd to 28th in Nashville, Tennessee. And they're going to be taking a limited amount of seats for doing financial consulting right there at the conference. They'll have multiple booths set up. And this is the first time I think you're going to see in a law enforcement setting where we are bringing financial professionals in to try to help you guys get your shit straight. So if grandma kicked the bucket and left you at 150 grand, or you have money issues or woes, or you're looking to plan for the future, we will have a lot of that set up for consulting at our conference. But without further ado, my pal, and at his last birthday party, he turned 40, and I ate lobsters like an absolute slob, embarrassing myself.
That is very true.
Yeah, I came in. I didn't even say hello to people. I just did,
where's like, the lobster? Where's the bib?
Yeah, oh yeah, dude, I was crushing. I was like, literally, people like, hey, what's your name? I'm like, doesn't matter. Like, I'm working on something right now.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so we've been friends quite a while. I was introduced to him a long time ago from a mutual friend of ours, and we became friends, but he certainly was eons ahead of me when it came to understanding finances and success and things like that. So it's cool that we're able to get together and try to share some of this stuff, because as I listen to him, I'm like, yo, people will find value in this. Everybody should know these things. They don't teach you this stuff in school.
Sure.
So let me lead you into the first question I have for you. What are the top three mistakes most people make financially in life? Like, let's go through the things that you see. You obviously plan for a lot of people. If you don't know, Jeremy was featured in Forbes recently. You manage over $2 billion in assets now.
Assets and other benefits. Yeah, absolutely.
He's doing it, folks. This is a guy who is, you know, an owner of a large financial institution. They oversee a lot of assets, and he's trusted and has some big name clientele that he can't post on the podcast or say here because of confidentiality issues. But he's the guy, and I don't know how I know him, but I happen to just know him.
I appreciate it. A lot of good relationships. But
yeah, I think the first piece is failure to plan, right? Like failure to engage in a discussion with someone that they trust and really just creating a roadmap, right? And that's basic. It's not, you know, I bought stocks when I should have bought bonds versus, you know, real estate, et cetera. It's really just sitting down, being engaged in a discussion with a spouse, with their quote unquote financial team, and really just having a conversation around what is it that you want to see happen and how do I start aligning the money piece to make that come to fruition. And understand it's not going to happen overnight, right? Like repetition wins the game, which I guess brings us also to the second point, right? One thing that we're seeing right now in the market as things are getting a lot tougher, failure to save money when it's difficult to save money, right? You know, it's very easy when when the market is up, cash flow is rich, you get a bonus, tax return comes back and it's favorable. But when times are hard, you know, when things are more expensive, dialing in some of those expenses, and I'm not saying not to go out and enjoy things with your family, but you know, making it an exercise to save when it's difficult to save is probably one of the big things that I, if you were to ask me, not so much a mistake, but when people get ahead in times like this, that's one of the, you know, one of the big factors. And then tax planning, right? Working, and you know, I'm not a tax person, I'm not a CPA, but you know, doing what I do as both a business owner, a father to my family, as well as a, you know, wealth manager, being hyper locked into tax strategy rather than preparation, I think also wins the day.
I want to go back to the first thing you said, and you talked about planning, right? Sure. So the first thing I want to say is, when you say that, I know we've talked about this in the past in the previous podcast episodes, I can just see the guy at the big branch, big name branch bank. When you walk in, they find, maybe you deposit a check, you had a little bit of inheritance. They give him the signal. They give her the signal. They come over and say, "Hi, Mr. Suarez. My name is Janet. I'm here at so-and-so of this bank branch."
It's happened.
Wanted to know if you wanted to sit down and go over some of your things. And you know, essentially, I have a funny feeling. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know you're not going to say anything negative about these people. But what I'm alluding to is, I can't imagine how many people they must sit down and convince that these planners are actually competent to be able to manage your money, when we know for a fact what a competent planner looks like versus these people who are hired to sell you essentially bullshit plans.
Well, yeah, it's misplacement of product, right? You know, they mean well. It is, you know, they're speaking from the perspective of what it is that they know, but probably within 3 to 4 minutes of that dialogue, now it jumps into, okay, interest rate driven, rate of return driven, this product is better than that. When truly, you know, the engagement point should be, tell me what you're up to, right? Like, what's important to you? What do you do for, you know, what do you do for a living? You know, recently we're working with a lot of folks up in Manhattan that are tech driven, right? Like, they work for these big technology companies. They had a lack of understanding of how interest rate variation could have a fundamental effect on how their stock and the way they get paid and how they feed their family ultimately can be affected by something like the Fed just raising interest rates. So having a discussion, those types of discussions, getting very intimate around what drives a household, what drives an individual, should always be the start point. Then the roadmap comes. And then, yes, there's nothing wrong with financial product. I make a living selling, you know, strategy, advice, financial product, but that always should come last. It's, you know, you sit down, you architect, you sit with your builder, and then you buy the lumber. That order of operation, not the lumber first.
This really solidifies my position of, when I hire somebody to do something important, I want to make sure I get the right guy.
Yeah.
I was at a establishment over the summer at night, and I'm having to be standing at this bar, and this kid next to me says, "What do you do for a living?" And I said, "But I do this thing." Right? I think people were taking pictures with me. So he's like, "What do you do for a living?"
You love that.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's fucking amazing, dude. Right? Imagine if that actually happened to you.
Never happens.
You know, it won't ever. Like, yeah, you're just not that special.
It's like, yeah, I'll talk to your wife. Let me pet your dog. Jeremy, nothing.
Yeah, that's it.
It's all good. I prefer that.
I mean, one. I'll take a picture with you on your birthday and shit. Maybe we'll do a picture for like our website from the conference. Nice. That'll be cool. And people say, like, "Who's that little guy?" I go, "Eh, it's just some fella." But it's an interesting story, because the kid says to me, "How do you do your financial investments?" And I went, "Okay, what difference does it make to you?"
Yeah.
He goes, "Well, I'm a financial investor." And I said to him,
"A financial investor."
Or something like that. Okay. Or some kind of financial investor or planner. I go, "Sure. Cool, man. How old are you?" He goes, "I'm 22.
Yeah.
I said, "You're 22. Okay. I said, "Do me a favor, pop your phone out, bring out your accounts. I want to see your millions and millions of dollars."
Yep.
And he said, he like looked at me, and I'm like, "Bro, you think at 40 years old, I would in a million years meet a guy at a bar who told me that you could be my financial investor hanging out here at night? I don't see any Lamborghinis in the street." So that leads me to believe that you're probably not doing great.
Yeah.
And the point of this story is, you know, you really should make sure the people that you're working with, when you're talking about your money, are the people that actually know what they're doing. So the question I have for you, not you, but people who are listening, is, what's your financial planner's position? Is that person broke? Does it look like they have money? Ask them, what are the things you're investing in? How are you making money? Because if they don't know how to make money, how the fuck are they gonna make money for you?
Yeah, and their background, right? Like, what type of people do you work for? Like, there's a lot of great planners out there, and some people need specialists, right? Like, I work with people that are in the law enforcement space. I have an intimate understanding on how a pension works, how a DB plan works, you know, all of that stuff. Those are good questions to ask your planner. And if they're satisfactory answers, then you know you're working with someone that's potentially best in class, right? But you know, it's funny. I was down in Austin, Texas recently with my brother-in-law, great group of guys. I'm the oldest by 15 years plus. Young guy in the industry comes up to me, goes, Jeremy, who does your life insurance? You know, you want to have a conversation? And I go, sure, let's have a conversation about it, right? Like, young guy, he came from the place of wanting to help, but I think he led with the wrong question, right? It's like, you know, he had no idea, what, of course, what I did for a living, but it's the typical approach, right? People lead with the product. It's how they're trained. It's processed. Because at the end of the day, the advisory industry is part sales, right? Like, the best in class guys are service providers first, excellent branding and marketing guys second, and then subject matter experts third. And the
should
guy,
be the opposite.
I think service wins the day. Second comes the subject matter piece and how they build out a team. And then, you got to be able to shake someone's hand and not give them the heebie-jeebies, right? Like, it's just got to go that way. People got to be comfortable with you if they're going to open up and have a discussion around a very intimate type of discussion, which is money, right?
It's like a double-edged sword. Sometimes I receive these messages on like Facebook from like somebody who went to high school. They're like, hey, Dennis, haven't heard from you in 23 years. Looks like things are great with you and your however many children you have. By the way, what's your life insurance plan look like? You know, and again, I don't mean to sound like a dick, but my point is you have to be aware of these people. This is no different than my aunt's a realtor part-time, and she also, like, works at the school district full-time.
Yeah. And I sympathize with those guys, right? Because everyone has to
start somewhere.
I graduated Fordham University 16 years ago, and I was that person, right? But I knew enough to get on the right team of professionals and, you know, check your ego at the door. I used to carry these guys' bags literally into the meetings, and the approach was, hey, I'm a part of this firm. I'm nothing more than what I currently am, but I'm super ambitious, and I think you should talk to my, you know, my superior, because I think he has some good ideas and can support you and your family.
Right.
And then it becomes a numbers game, right? Like, as many times as you put that into the world, people say, okay, I'll be open to that or not open to that. And you just gotta stick it out until you develop your skill set, both, you know, the practitioner side as well as your reputation and your brand.
And unfortunately, I get that you got to start somewhere, but these are people's livelihoods.
It's very true.
And if you're somebody who's getting into this field as a financial advisor or planner, really should be doing a lot of homework and be ensuring that when you link up with people who actually know what they're talking about,
sure,
and work with them until you're ready to grow your wings and fly a little bit. It's the same thing in real estate, man. I see these people get their real estate licenses and they're like, hey, just passed my real estate exam. Let me know about your home buying needs.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying these people can't grow, because I was that guy too, right? I came out and I didn't know anything, and I probably faked it till I made it a little bit.
Yeah.
But dude, in the interim, I also was doing everything I could to learn about real estate. When I took new people on my team, I actually had a distinct note on my board, one of my like boards, my cork boards that I pin stuff to, and it said, "These are the 10 things that all new realtors must know." And it wasn't anything that you thought it was. It wasn't like, you need to know how the arbitration process occurs if you go to a... No, it was, you need to know about heat, you know, oil heat versus gas heat, what well water was, what all the stuff associated with a house was. That's really what you're trying to help people make a comfortable decision on is, you know, is this house good? They'll pick where they want to live.
I'm going to share. So recently, myself and our CIO, Bob, got interviewed by a guy on the West Coast that I really appreciated his process. And, you know, through that series of interviews, we were mutually interviewing each other, and now we decided we want to, you know, work together. And I look forward to working with this one individual. But man, he was dialed in. You know, and I was talking to Bob, because everything in my world now is relationship-based. Like, we get an introduction, and it's, I hate to say it, but more than likely we're going to work together, provided that there's a mutual goal that we can align with, right? But this guy didn't know us from Adam, and he had such an eloquent approach around asking the questions that he just wanted to get clear on before he decided to send us his money, right? I'll send that over to you, because I thought those were very locked in, not douchey questions. But he said, hey, Jeremy, I don't know you. Bob Farrell, I really don't know you. You come somewhat highly recommended through one person and another person, but I want to spend some time and start developing this relationship before I commit the time and energy and have you commit the time and energy. So I'll send that over to you. You know, you can flip that out to your people around questions to ask folks around, you know, who are ultimately, you know, shepherding you and guiding you.
Yeah, we'll put that on Instagram. Decisions. So yeah, people listen to the podcast will be able to see that on Instagram. Yeah. We'll do a slide deck on that. Again, I just want to iterate that it is important to know who you're giving money to. And on the back of that, I've heard something over and over again in theme of people who are successful. And it was one of their biggest mistakes was investing in things they didn't understand. That seems to be an ongoing theme. And, you know, so how, one, should people learn to understand about what they're investing in? How do you educate them on that? And what should people be investing in?
Yeah, so a lot of folks don't have a high financial IQ, right? So a lot of people don't know what they don't know. And the proper, I think, wealth management process is really an exploratory process, working with professionals so you can get a concrete understanding of what it is that they're looking to accomplish for you, and then making a decision, right? So, you know, most folks take on the attitude that I'm going to leave the technical stuff to the technician, and provided that they can give me satisfactory answers on an ongoing basis, and more importantly, when I need my money, for whatever reason, it's going to be accessible to me, and I can align it then with a new goal or an existing goal, or ultimately repurpose those dollars. That tends to be a pretty good fact pattern that people could say, okay, I can get behind that effort. Because no one's really going to understand everything unless you decide to take on this financial planning business, you know, wholeheartedly. And then quite frankly, right, you don't need someone like me. You self-manage. But, you know, a lot of folks really have that lack of alignment. They make decisions, right? I see it all the time. I sit down with an entrepreneur that's looking to build their key personnel, and they want to ultimately exit their business in 5 to 7 years. And then the financial decisions that they're making on the backside are just not aligned with that. They're not bad decisions. There's just lack of alignment with what it is that he's saying to me is going to be the best possible use of his time and his dollar. So always having those goals mapped out. And then when you do get the product and implementation, saying, okay, well, let's just go back and make sure that those products and recommendations are in aligned with what it is that we initially spoke about.
I'm also going to say this. I think it's extremely important to at least get some education in finances, tax planning, wealth strategies. And the crazy thing is, right now, for free, you can go on YouTube and watch many videos from, you know, Robert Kiyosaki. There's a lot of videos. Yep. Anybody from the Rich Dad Poor Dad team. And there's also several other financially successful people that are giving you advice of what they've done in the past. Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, all these people who are significant. Mark Cuban spends a lot of time making videos explaining to people what to do.
Cardone on the real estate side.
No question about it. But how do you know which ones to listen to? Because I got to tell you, I don't agree with every single thing every single person says. So what would you recommend?
Now more than ever, there's more financial opinions out there.
Right.
And you got to understand, when people are speaking, they're 100% speaking from their own perspective. And that doesn't make them right or wrong. It's just how they're speaking, right? So listen to a lot, internalize very little, and then you'll gravitate to people that have the same types of mindsets and goals that you have. And then I would say really start dialing into that information, take notes, and then bring it back to your advisory team. Speak with your accountant on it. Speak to your wealth advisor about it. Speak to your property and casualty risk manager about it. And I think that's really the best way where you could kind of go through this funneling of so much information that is out there to ultimately put yourself in a place where you can make an impactful decision. Because when I got started out in this business, like, there was very few Google. And, you know, the thing I hate when I'm sitting down with clients, well, you know, we get alignment and then say, well, you know what? I Googled this and I researched that. Some of it came back positive. Some of it came back negative. And my response is always, let's assume that everyone was correct in what it is that they were saying, but how is it relevant to your situation, right? Like, relevance to your situation, I think, is the determining factor.
When you said people have financial, personal opinions about their finances or the way they see the world with finances, the first thing that came to my mind was crypto.
Yep.
And there was a crypto gold rush. Actually, I had a lot of guys sending me messages on social media platforms like, hey, man,
like me and like three of my friends about to be billionaires. Yeah. Want to see if you want to get in for like 25 grand.
Yeah.
You should let me know. And I'm not lying to you. One of those people reached out to me several months later, wrote, hey man, do you know have anybody who's like a specialist in like fraud? Because like we lost everything.
We lost for sure.
Because we got, I don't even know what was going on. So what's your thoughts on crypto gold rushes and what people do? And I'm going to put my two cents in before we start the conversation of it being an emotional decision.
There's a level of FOMO. There's a level of emotion. The thing that I hear most often, it's, you know, they start equating it to a dollar. They start equating it to gold. I think, you know, 3 to 4%, 5%, if you want to take a flyer on some crypto, is not fundamentally a bad thing. But when you start looking at that as a storeholder of dollars, right, and you want to start exiting other storeholders, to me, something that can move 15, 20% within the course of a week is just not a storeholder. It's more of a speculative investment. So if it fits the category of who you are, speculative investing, and you want to do that, then yeah, crypto's a totally fine thing. And I'm sure it's going to evolve. And I think the way the artifacts look today, they're going to look very different when we do a podcast in 10 years. But don't put it into the category of USD or gold, right? Like there's just too much volatility associated. It kind of killed me when I see folks, you know, prior to this year, like people were flush, right? They were flush with their 401k. They were flush with their portfolio. There were a lot of entitlements out there that allowed a lot of people to store hold cash. And there wasn't a whole lot going on because of the COVID thing. And yeah, unfortunately, a lot of folks that had no business investing in crypto, the equity market as well, right? The stock market as well. They were over allocating. And now when things come back, they just were not ready for that volatility. It was not in line with their risk profile. And it just is what it is, right? You know,
tough lessons learned.
It's a tough lesson learned.
Yeah, it's, and folks, I can't emphasize this enough. Like nobody's saying to sit home, be timid and be scared, but have the knowledge of what you're putting money into, not just what your fucking friends are telling you.
Just understand it.
These stories of these overnight billionaires because they invested in CryptoPunks. And again, I'm not an expert on it. And I know there are these stories of these, but like, folks, it's no different than hitting the lottery. You know, you except the tickets to these are much more expensive than $1 or $2 they're going to whack you at the fucking 7-Eleven.
Yeah, these guys that are spending hours a day researching it and getting fundamentally educated on it, no problem at all. But knowing a guy who knew a guy who happened to do good with it and you saying, hey, on a flyer, I'm going to give you $10,000. To me, that's highly speculative and you're probably putting yourself in a position where you're going to lose.
I watch a lot of motivational videos and, you know, somebody who's trying to do the best I can with my life.
Sure.
And a lot of stuff comes up in my TikTok feed or my Reels feeds. And these videos over and over again, but there is one interesting thing that I've seen recently, and I know this already, but I want to share it with everybody. And it's shortcuts in success.
Okay.
It seems to be that people think that there's this shortcut, and that kind of stems from the crypto conversation, that you can find a way to do it faster than anybody else, and you know better than anybody else does. Let's talk about some of the people that have had some success, how long they've been around. I mean, Elon Musk, these guys have been doing it for really a lot longer than you think.
A lot of failures.
Yeah, like a lot longer than you think. They're ninjas and they're committed and they're psychos. And you're talking about 25, 30 years of experience as savage ninjas in the field with a lot of mistakes, a lot of ups and downs. So people need to really understand that there probably isn't much of a shortcut you can take in success. You're probably going to want to look for the long cut.
I agree. Listen, I'm always for accelerating the process, but at the proper cadence, right? Mm-hmm. There are very few, and I haven't seen any, so I'm not going to say there are none, but get rich quick techniques out there that are sustainable, right? Like, yeah, sometimes you step in it and it just the ball happens to bounce your way, but on an average, it's not going to, right? You know, fundamentals tend to win the day. Risk management wins the day. Cash flow, being intimate with your cash flow, wins the day. And then, yeah, every once in a while, you'll get a pop in the market, or you'll get a nice increase in your cap rate as it relates to your real estate investments. Those are things that you've kind of already stacked the deck for, and with time, become more of a predictable outcome rather than saying day one, I'm going to go chase this one thing and be fully reliant on that, right? Like, it's problematic.
When we say accelerate the process, I want to share with people how to accelerate the process appropriately. Sure. So, and Jeremy, elaborate on this, but people will often ask me, how did StreetCop Training get so big so fast? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it hasn't gotten so big so fast. I've been doing this for 10 plus years now, and I also have 14 years of law enforcement experience. Prior to that, I spent a lot of time. I paid a lot of dues. But one thing I always tell people is the educational process, reading more books, taking in more podcasts. And you might think you don't have time to do this, but you're going fishing this weekend? Cool. Throw earbuds in your ears and throw on a book that'll make you better.
Yep.
Even if it's not one that's speaking to you, knowing that it's better, and they're easy to find. Best business books, Google. Out of the top 10 they give you, even if it's a subjective analysis, you're going to find some quality there. You're going to see the overall themes of
You'll find some nuggets.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, no question about it. And that may speak to you a little bit, but at least at a very minimum, it'll give you the knowledge base of like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here.
Right.
And that leads me to my next thing of, we often hear, we're often told, and a lot of people want to subscribe to this, that there has to be a lot of saving initiative. What do you think about saving what you currently do? So let's say you're making $50,000 a year, saving off of that, or figuring out a way to make more money and then saving off of that. So my point is, you can either, if you're in a position where you're like, this is it, this is all I can make, blah, 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 I'm stuck here. No matter what I do, I can't get past 75 grand a year. We're playing off of that. But one variable I want to talk about, and I've talked about in the past on several occasions, is this idea there's 156 hours in a week. Mm-hmm. People are working typically 40. I'll give them 8 times 756. That's 96. So I'll give them 8 hours a night of sleep. So the question I have for people is, what do you do with the other 60 hours?
Right.
And in those 60 hours, you can find a completely different life. We have a guy who works for this company right now. He's in the police academy. He's going to be a police officer. And I told him, just, you might as well, when you're done with all of this, just keep this job. Mm-hmm. Because essentially what he makes almost doubles what he'd be making as a cop.
Sure.
But the trade-off is he's going to have to do 40 hours a week here. But you know, the cool thing for him is he can work from home. Mm-hmm. He can help us from his house, from home. And he's down with that. The lifestyle difference of taking an extra, I would even say 20 hours a week and going to find something else you can do. But you have to trade off some things, right? You're not going to be able to play cornhole in the backyard with your boys, right? You're not going to be able to go fishing for 6 hours on Saturday. That's a discipline. And what money, how much money could you make?
It comes down to what's important, right? Because to your point, if you're earning a fixed income and living a lifestyle, there's only X that you could save, right? Like if you're after that immediate exponential growth, you got to keep money in velocity, right? So you got to keep your time in velocity. So you need to go out into the world, identify areas where you could just generate more cash flow for yourself and take that cash flow and then put that cash flow in other cash flow producing areas, because at some level you're going to cap out as well from a timing perspective. But while you're kind of climbing that mountain, money comes into your world, putting it in an account and hoping and dreaming that it's ultimately going to grow to a satisfactory amount. To me, that's somewhat of a plan on hope, right? But going out, spending very dialed in time, generating the maximum cash flow that you potentially generate based on your skill set, and then putting that into other endeavors that are also generating that passive income, that passive cash flow. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask me, that's how people get that quick, quote unquote, exponential growth. And it's not quick. It's not like it goes day one to day two. It's over 10 years time. Now you can look back at a body of work and say, man, I really used my time efficiently. I used my dollars efficiently. My assets and my dollars were working for me as well, right? So it does take time. But there are ways to accelerate.
No question about it. And you know what's interesting is, let's take 20 hours a week extra, right? So instead of 40, you're going to work 60.
Sure.
Not going to kill you to work 60. The only reason we work 40 is if you go back in history of the United States is, do you know who created the 40-hour work week? I'm not sure. It was Henry Ford.
Okay.
And the reason Henry Ford created the 40-hour work week was because he needed people to spend money and buy his cars and go on trips and use the cars.
Okay.
So he realized that if people were working 6-7 days a week, they would never buy anything because they'd be working the whole time. Mm-hmm. So what they did was he created a 5-day work week. And the people had weekends off to spend, or whatever, maybe midweek days off, to go on these trips, to drive cars with their families, to use the tires that he was selling to them, to use the cars he was selling to them. And that's, if you actually look at Ford's impact in the United States or standard United States economy now and how it works and functions, mm-hmm. he literally invented almost the whole goddamn thing. Just one guy. Yep. So it's very interesting. But let's go back to this. You have an extra 20 hours a week, depending on your part of the country, what you want to do. And you may do things that you don't think you want to do, but I find it kind of unlikely that you wouldn't be able to find a job that at least pays you $30 an hour cash, right? So $30 an hour cash, in my mind, easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
It's what my babysitter makes, right?
Right.
And she does a phenomenal job.
Right.
Right. But yeah, you could absolutely
bartender at Topgolf.
Absolutely.
Anywhere in the fucking country is going to make $30 an hour cash. You probably make more than that, but I'm just going to say we're playing these very conservative numbers. So we look at that and we say, okay, $30 an hour cash times 80 hours a month. You're at $2,500 a month, ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And you're now at, you know, essentially what, $30,000 more a year in your life?
Correct.
So you can take that 30 for those extra 20. You start putting that into the proper channels, the right investments. You'd be surprised at what you're going to end up with at the end of your career.
Absolutely.
You talk about like becoming a millionaire. And that's my next topic I'm going to bring up is like planning to retire poor or planning to retire rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are under the impression that they're supposed to retire poor. That's not how the whole thing's set up, it seems.
Well, it's the mindset too, right? So in a common thing I hear is in retirement, your tax bracket's going to go down. So you should do this and that, and you don't have to worry about this and that. Where I take a stand back and I'm like, okay, well, if you look at the history of the marginal bracket, right? Me personally, I would sign up for what we got going on today, even though I hate, you know, we pay what we pay in taxes. We're staring down the barrel of probably a heightened system, right? People are going to be paying more taxes in the future, but forget about politics, stuff that we can't ultimately control. The premise of being in a lower tax bracket is you literally hitting this magical age of 62 or 65. Now you've retired. Maybe you got your gold watch. And now suddenly you're going to live a lifestyle with less of a demand on generated cash flow, meaning you're going to be spending less and enjoying less. Like who would want to do that? I don't know anyone that at the magic age of 62 or 63 now is suddenly going to stop wanting to go out to eat at the nice places,
right,
or their subscriptions or their golf course or whatever it is that moves them to travel with their family, gifting to their family. So, you know, it's funny. We were in the process of redoing our website, and I got coached up from some guys out in Indiana, and they were like, I don't like the word retirement. I like retire, you know, work optional, right? Because in these later years of life, you know, we just want to give people the financial stability and the financial ability to do what it is that you want and not have to do the 40-hour work week, right? So, you know, that's, again, how you stack the deck and how you're saving money and how you're positioning your time to make money has everything to do with it.
I am going to go back because I didn't get off. I had on my notes here that we were going to speak about planning to retire rich versus planning to retire poor, and people have it screwed up, right? They're planning to retire into a lower tax bracket. It's the idea of deferred compensation, correct, right? That's basically some of the idea there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, deferring money now and then ultimately reaping the benefit there. And again, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with deferred compensation. In your industry, unfortunately and notoriously, when I meet people that come to me from the street cop channels, I say, okay, well, you know, let's talk about what's important. Let's talk about what you've done. There's an overwhelming majority of free cash flow going to these areas that are deferred to later on in life. And that's okay if you're the person that you're saying, hey, I'm just going to put my head down. I'm going to work for the next 25, 30 years and all these other things that potentially life could present to me, I'm not willing to entertain. That works there. But I've been meeting more and more entrepreneurial police officers, the Kenny Williamses of the world, guys that are up to stuff. They're of service, they're, you know, to their community, but they're also looking to build their own personal balance sheet. There's a lack of alignment with that again, right? So, yeah, you know, really getting super dialed in on if you have a dollar or $3 to save, it probably shouldn't be going into one bucket. It should probably be going into many different types of storeholders and wealth accumulators.
I'm going to go back to what I said before. We were on 80 hours. 80 hours times $30 an hour. And this is just simple stuff that sometimes people just need to hear. So that's 20 hours a week, 80 hours a month. What did we say? $25,000 a year, $30,000?
You said 30, yep.
Okay, $30,000 a year. How about this? Watch this one. Let's say you add 10 more hours in a week. So 10 more hours times $30 an hour. That puts us at $3,600 a month. That's $43,200 a year more for an extra 30 hours a week.
Okay.
So now you're at $43,200 more. Let's do 40 hours. You're working like two full-time jobs. So it's a seven-day work week. You're going to forfeit your Saturdays and Sundays. You're going to knock out 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, maybe a little bit plus, a couple hours extra here and there. Still leaves you a lot of time, right? If you worked 7 to 3 on a Sunday, 7 to 3 on a Saturday, you still got 3 to 11 to hang out with your family,
yeah,
right?
You still got time to do stuff. Yeah. Absolutely.
That would bring you at $30 an hour annually, $57,600 a year more okay. in life. For police officers, where the median salary is essentially $50,000 to $60,000 a year nationally, mm-hmm. that's a big difference in lifestyle, dude.
It's a double.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Almost big 60 deal. Grand a year. Now you take that 60, people don't realize this. You take that 60 and maybe not even touch it for 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. and get it in that account. And folks, you've got a real nice soft cushion to land on in case shit really hits the fan. People say, well, it's a long time, 3 or 4 years. No, it's not. It goes very fast.
It's not. And listen, if depending on how dialed in you do you want it, you know, we say things like sit it in an account almost like we're gonna you know, lock it away. I would almost argue put it in an account or put it into a position that now could support generating more cash flow. So, right, you kind of bite the bullet for those early years, climbing the mountain, putting in the extra time, and then you start building out this, you know, this slush fund, this reserve account, this investment account, however you want to term it, that is now generating that free cash flow and getting you to that $57,000 a year. And maybe at that point in life, you say, I don't want to do that extra time anymore. Kids are getting older. The soccer becomes more important for me to go to. Maybe I hire someone to ultimately start managing these dollars, right? Like these are all just options.
I also want to talk about the variable of hard work. And you can elaborate on this a little bit because I'll give you credit. I know you a long time. I was in a phone with Dana yesterday. We were talking about you. I was obviously razzing you as much as I possibly can because nothing better than going to
they
your
told me.
Nothing better than going to your employees and be able to make fun of the boss and the boss can't do nothing to me.
I love it.
So I said, but I'll give it to this dude. He works harder than anybody I know. You work a lot. You work hard. And I know that even at this point in your life, you're even having some thoughts about working as hard as that you do because you put the time in, dude. But what I want to tell people is this is an interesting theory. A lot of us here in this profession of law enforcement, we get caught up and sold in this idea of these amazing pension systems. Some of them don't even have them anymore. Now they're going to 401ks for pension mm-hmm. systems.
Saw that, yep.
I want to tell a little story. I've told it before, and it has to do with somebody I know. And I don't see this person very often. And I didn't know much of what they had going on. They live very frugal lives, very small house, don't spend on much, very, very frugal. And this person's only about 5 years older than me. So, you know, as I'm having success, I'm trying to just constantly take in as much data as possible. And I go to this family member's house. And I hadn't seen him in a long time. And I said, hey, how's things? I know the guy power washes houses. I've told this story before. Mm-hmm. So the house power washing. He goes, very good. I'm power washing houses 6.5 days a week. Mm-hmm. I said, ooh. He goes, yeah, I'm up. I start power washing the first house at 6 o'clock in the morning. I usually get done about 11:15. I'll finish that one up, eat lunch, go to the next one, knock another one out, 12 to 5, 12 to 6, somewhere around there. So I have this machine, da-da-da. I go, what's your overhead? He goes, I just got the machine. I got a little insurance.
Yep.
I fill the water tank up here at home, and I hook this thing up to the back of my pickup truck, and I go out and I do this thing. He's a one-man show. So I said, all right, what are you making on a house? And he says, I make $500 to do a house. And immediately I go, hold on a second. And then I actually see, I'll never forget this, on their counter in their kitchen, we were visiting them. I saw 3 checks that he had personal written, handwritten checks from people who he power washed their houses. Mm-hmm. And they were for $500 a piece. So I knew he wasn't telling a lie about that. So I'm going, this motherfucker is making $1,000 a day.
Yeah.
As a 1099, which people have to understand, that's a whole different game than W-2.
That's a big
benefit. So you start doing the math on this, and I know that he's a hard worker, always has been. Let's give him 15 days off. He's making $350,000 a year, essentially almost cash. Because you understand the taxes of it, it's going to be almost cash if he has mm-hmm. good tax planning. Power washing.
Yeah.
6.5 days a week. Now, here's the beauty of it. People don't understand this. People say, well, that's fucking nuts. I'd have to work 6.5 days a week. That's crazy. These hours are insane. He'd have no life. Well, hold on. Hold on a second. Just hear me out, folks. Let's say out of that 350, he takes $100,000 a year and lives on that. Because I got to tell you the way they live, they ain't spending more than 100 grand a year. Okay. I can just fucking tell. They live in a different part of the country. It's not as expensive as it is in New Jersey here. So he's got 250 a year. And I'm going to let you jump in here for a second. At 250 a year, he's able to save $1 million in 4 years. Jeremy, tell us what you could do with $1 million as far as a very conservative account, which you could expect on a comfortable rate of return in the area of interest. Very conservative. Nothing's ever going to happen to this million. Interest rate on $1 million, what will it pay you annually? Well,
think about where T-bills are at right now, right? I'm talking about like secure stuff, a CD, a T-bill, you know, 4.75%. So 47,500 on $1 million.
Before, was it a little higher, 5.5, probably in a better market?
Well, actually right now it's, you know, the buying opportunity is in like some of these sleepy investments that we haven't seen over the last 5 or 6 years. You know, like T-bills are now suddenly
what's
something.
What's a T-bill?
It's a treasury bill, okay. You know, backed by the government, you know, a CD, you know, FDIC and secured, you know, one of the positive things with the interest rates going up, now suddenly these historical places to kind of put away sleepy cash over the last couple of months have really, really come up. But yeah, you know, with $1 million, depending on how ambitious he wants to get, he could put that money to work, right? Whether it's $40,000-$50,000 a year, he may say, you know what, with that million, I want to go to the bank and I want to go buy 2 pieces of real estate. I'm going to take out a mortgage of X and it's going to be income producing. And provided that the people pay that and the cap rate is good, and ultimately he also maybe does some things like does some tax credits, like a cost segregation to help, because one thing you didn't factor there was he does have to pay, you know, tax on that number. The point there is he could really put that money to work for that 4-year period of really hard work. And then if he chooses, start to pull back a little bit on his hours. Or what I would do is put that money to work, hire more folks, and now he's washing less houses, but getting the net off of it.
You're getting half my story so far. I want to get on these numbers. So, this is a funny story, because you weren't exactly where I went. So I said, in my head, I'm going, okay, 4 years, this dude could bank somewhere in the ballpark of $1 million and still live comfortably. In 4 more years, he's got $2 million in the bank. He's retired. You're done. You could be done with working for the rest of your life. You put in 8 or 9 really, really hard years versus 40 mediocre ones. You could be done sitting on $2 million. As nuts as this sounds, people think I'm crazy. Yeah, it's going to take work. Well, should I go buy a power washer? Man, I don't know. You know what I mean? What do? You find out a few people. You start with 2-3 accounts a week. Yep. One, maybe you're power washing one house here. You do a nice enough job. You're watching YouTube videos on how to power wash. You take some of that money and buy some new equipment. Hey, I know how to power wash your concrete too. Let me do this slab for free. Let me know what you think, what it looks like. And if you like it, I'll do the rest for you for this price. I have this great machine. And you come out, people go, oh, it looks beautiful. Well, how much is it? You know, $300, $400 to a homeowner is not that big of a deal.
Yep.
When you're talking about saving them a day of power washing a house.
Hire some kids to come do it. I just had the power wash down in LBI. And the guy I spoke to on the phone that was the business owner, was just a bunch of nice young college guys that live on the island right there. And they would just came out, banged it out, had a good time. You give them a little bit of a tip. The guy probably made 80% on that deal.
Well, let's go back to this, because I do have the last part of that story. So, you know, 8.5, 9 years, maybe 10 at most. You have $2 million in the bank, and now you can have an ROI of comfortably living off of your savings of $2 million for the rest of your life. You'll have to work again, because now you're back almost close to that $100,000 year lifestyle.
Sure.
But you don't have to work again. And guess what? If you want to work another 5, you can just keep playing this game over and over again. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of options at that point. Now, what I said to him was, if you hired one more guy, and of course his response was, well, how, you know, people are starting to charge a lot more money for their labor. I go, yes, I'm aware. And every business owner in the world is
very aware. Yeah.
But they think it's over because it's a $5 an hour increase. Like, oh, it's over.
Yeah.
They don't realize what they're trading off in the back end yet. So your net's not going to be as high, but you're still trading off money that you could make. So I said, okay, so one guy, what do you think you'd have to pay somebody to come out and power wash you? It's a daunting job. It's not, you get in some good shape. It's hot. They're in South Carolina.
Yep.
And he said, $25 an hour, I could get somebody really, really good. I go, $25 an hour, you're doing a 10-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
How many more houses do you think you could do? He's like, at least one more. I go, so on that one decision alone, you're talking about making an extra $250 a day. Start compounding that times 350 days a year.
It's significant.
You know what I mean? So like, and I'll never forget his face. He went, oh, I go, imagine if you hired two and sent a whole nother crew out.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're doing three, it's costing you $500, but you're doing 3 more houses a day or even 2 more.
Yep.
Now you're making $500 a day. You know, and that's really the game. But the balance that comes into play is one, now you got to start getting into actually running a business.
Yeah.
You're no longer a freelancer. You are somebody who has to put some thought into, and maybe opening it too fast is some kind to the detriment. You got to be able to expand and contract very rapidly. You don't want to have too much overhead expense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here we are. We're on the brink of a simple thing. People are like, oh, but I don't have a degree in physiology. Like, motherfucker, This dude didn't even graduate high school. I know he didn't. He's got a GED.
Yeah.
He's about as sharp as a bowling ball. But he has one variable that nobody else has. He'll work his fucking face off.
He works.
Oh, boy.
There's a lot of jobs that are paying, you know, cash, you know, that people don't want to do that, you know, whether you humble yourself or ultimately start building out a crew. There's money out there to be done.
Oh, yeah. These are my most wealthy friends, bro.
I mean, like, they're not doing the brain surgery, right? Like, you know, we work with a lot of HVAC folks and construction people and, you know, just laborers at the end of the day that happen to be also very, very smart, educated business people. Those guys, phenomenal.
Oh, they're killing it.
You know, it's not the...
Dude, my neighbor down the street from me, he's got eight trucks on the road. He's a plumbing company.
Yeah.
A lot of my neighbors in the neighborhood that I live in are people who came from everywhere that I came from. Matter of fact, guys in my neighborhood are from very similar situations as me and have just put a lot of hard work into getting where they're at.
It's great.
Yeah, it's real cool.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard this a lot. Cash is trash. So tell me about what that means, cash is trash. And again, I could just hear older generations, the boomers, having money in the bank. Tell us where... Typical people keep their liquid assets, money, cash, versus smart people where they keep their money and cash accessible. Tell them about this.
Yeah, I think, who did I hear recently say cash is trash? I think it was Cardone, right?
Well, you hear it from Ray Dalio a lot.
Dalio, they're not saying cash is trash or liquidity is trash, but really what they're saying is there's a false sense of hope and security in keeping your dollars in a position that is not going to outpace with inflation. And right now there's really no backing to it, right? So dollars are getting pumped out there. There's so many entitlements. I mean, as a side note with cash, you would think that a lot of business owners would be hurting. I'm talking about hurting coming out of COVID. And, you know, now we see a very volatile market. I got to tell you, the people that we're meeting with have never had fundamentally more cash on their balance sheet because they did put their head down. They did a lot of hard work and they also received things like the PPP, PPP part two, these ERTC credits, you know, all that stuff. So the idea of cash is trash is there's nothing wrong with having the right amount of, you know, or having liquidity. It's all about having the right amount of liquidity specifically for that individual. And then once you've hit that target market, you got to put that money out elsewhere to work, right? Whether it's equities, like a hedge fund manager would suggest, whether it be a piece of real estate like a REIT or a real estate manager, you know, would ultimately suggest. But the idea of cash is trash, I think,
has it with the inflation, right?
It has a lot to do with the inflation.
So what inflation means?
So calculating liquidity and having a very clear understanding of how you store liquidity on your balance sheet is a very fundamental different thing than how you invest in other endeavors in your world or reinvest back in your business, right? So there has to be a balance with it. You have to have cash because it does serve a function as well.
Right. And when we say cash is trash, essentially, I guess in layman's terms, is with inflation, your dollar can't keep up. You put $100,000 into the bank.
Correct.
Essentially, if you can understand this, in a year, maybe it's worth $88,000, where if you put it in an account where you can borrow against that account, so your money, let's put $100,000 in an account, this account returns 5%, which is going to be very, very whole numbers. So now your account's making what per year? $5,000 versus your savings account making what? $58?
$58, yeah.
Right?
So yeah, it's a function of the inflation piece, like the world around us getting more expensive. And then also what these guys are also hammering is the lost opportunity. What could have that grown to if you would have said, okay, well, let's leave the false security of having all this cash. Let's dial in exactly how much cash is the perfect amount of liquidity for you as the individual. And the rest of that, let's go put it into the capital market and let it work for you.
Right.
And there's a million different types of asset classes that could quote unquote work for you. You just have to be knowledgeable and understanding of what it is that you want, you know, where you want your dollars ultimately to work. And having, you know, that goes back to our initial discussion around just knowing where you're putting your money.
Yeah. Right. And what people don't realize is you can put your money's $10,000, $20,000 if you have it saved into accounts. Then while that money makes 5.5%, maybe 4.75%, whatever it may be, you can then borrow back at 2.5%, 2.8%.
100%.
So you're taking your money and using it, but it's in some weird way still making money. And these are the things that everybody needs to get educated on. I don't care what kind of position you're in financially. I think today brought a lot of value of like, I feel like I'm stuck. What else can I do? I said this in a car ride with one of the girls who works here. I said, many things in your life, the variables of how your life is going to go, lies in your hands.
Sure.
There's nobody else to blame. There's nothing else to look for except you. And you live in an internet age where information is endless. And this is one of those things in life where you have to be savvy if you'd like to live a better life, mm-hmm. at least knowing what the fuck you're doing and what you're looking at. And it doesn't take much discipline to, instead of hitting Netflix tonight, going to YouTube and searching financial knowledge,
sure.
And spending an hour or two. There are these moments, man. These moments that you have time. You got to think about what you're doing with your time. If you'd like to have a better life, you know, people say all the time, well, money isn't the variable of happiness. Nobody's saying it is,
yep.
right? But I got to tell you, if you're a happy person, a lot of the pressures of what the world feels like, and it's never going away, it starts to subside a little bit. You get to focus a lot of your energy on other things that are important, like your kids. So yep. you're not panicked about how you're gonna buy. And dude, you got to pay the dues, right? Yep. Unless your grandpa died, you're not going to hit the lottery, folks. I'm sorry. You're not hitting the fucking, like, I'm just sorry. $50,000 is not going to make or break your life for the rest of your life. But consistently doing something wise and making more money and taking responsibility for how you want your life to be. But it comes with discipline.
Yep.
You got to find your purpose first, your motivation, and then your discipline. Nothing make you get more motivated than having children, that's for sure.
Very true. And they keep you on your toes.
Give us one last thing to leave with today that somebody could do immediately, right now, that would make a difference in their life. And it could be something very simple as like, hey, there's an app. If you take the last 83 cents of every purchase, it'll go into this account, and you'll be surprised at the end of the year there's $903 in there. You tell me. I mean, it's your choice.
You know what's interesting? So my business part is actually developing an app, but I think start looking at the sequence of how you save money, I think, is a very important thing. Right, a lot of people are conditioned to save when they can, rather than building in a, you know, going to your point around habits. Consider savings first and then spending second. I think that's a very practical way of doing it. Now, that order of operation in your mind and how you actually put it into practice could be many different ways, but honoring a savings rate is very important. Honoring your time, and then constantly, to your earlier points, then around what can you do with your time. And what can you do with your dollars to ultimately generate more wealth, right? Transferable wealth, and also start allowing you to buy back some of that time later on. But up front, there's really no easy way to deal with it. Like, you're going to have to educate yourself. You're going to have to put in the time, and you're going to have to be willing to do things that maybe the masses aren't, if you're going to jump ahead, at least monetarily. If not, wait for rich uncle somewhere and hopefully, you know, hope that you're in the will somewhere, or, you know, leave it the chance, or just be fine with the status quo. Because, by the way, that's okay too.
Right.
Right. Like, not like.
But just don't complain.
Accumulating money isn't for everybody.
Right. But if you're complaining and you need to make more money, you know, the things that you're doing for pleasure are going to have to get forfeited. You know, listen,
or be in a different relationship with your employer. Right. I would, and you know, we have this type of culture in at the firm. But hey, listen, I want to make an extra $50,000 this year. Like, don't approach it like, Jeremy, can you give me an extra 50? Because the answer is probably going to be no. But can we collaborate on something? Doesn't have to be equally equitable. But here's an idea. This is something I've been doing. This is something I saw you do, where we could really start working towards generating more compensation for both of us, mm-hmm. or for myself. That, you know, speak to your employees around that. Speak to your key relationships. You know, people welcome those types of discussions rather than, you know, the sour face that you get when maybe the bonus isn't what you intended, or, you know, Joe got more overtime than Mary, right? That's just a defeatist mentality.
Right. Well, dude, this has been great. And it's always a pleasure to have you here. People need the education. And folks, beyond this podcast episode, I mean, I can't emphasize it enough. There is unlimited resources. Take a lot of it in before you sign on to somebody you believe in their position. Hear from different perspectives. Listen to 10 different people on how they spend their money. But again, that one common thing I hear over and over again is you should know what you're investing in. Some of the biggest mistakes I ever made was giving money or spending money in things I didn't know enough about.
Yep.
It's a common theme over and over again. I don't want to forewarn all of you. Don't jump on this emotional train when opportunities like crypto show up and it's all these different things, and man, you might be able to play it right. But I got to tell you, I don't know personally anybody who's played it right just yet.
Yeah.
That's me though. I mean, you have obviously different players.
I know a handful, but they're not the majority. They're definitely the minority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're probably educated and knew exactly what they were up to.
It's what they were up to and what it is that they're doing. And they hedged it and they aligned themselves with the right relationships. It wasn't, hey, on a flyer, I'm going to open up this app and now the app is going to solve my problem.
Right.
It's just, that wasn't the fact pattern.
Well, listen, guys, on top of everything else we have going on at the conference in Nashville, Jeremy and his team will be there. Be one of the first to sign up and get some financial advice for free. And those guys will be setting you up for a successful future, a better life. And that's part of the things that we do here. I actually have no skin in the game on it, to be very clear. He is just an asset to the world. And it's important that he cares about law enforcement as much as everybody who cares about law enforcement does. And he's going to show up and give you guys the opportunity to speak with them. And the best thing about him is he never tries to sell you anything, but I have a funny feeling that people are going to want to sign on with your team.
I appreciate it.
And I have not had one person in the, I would probably say 50 plus people I've steered in your direction ever complain to me about you. Actually, as a matter of fact, I get thanks over and over again because they feel like their lives were saved and their whole life is on a different path because they have the actual financial advisory that is important. And guys, be weary. There are a lot of people out there who claim to know what to do with your money. The question I have for them is, what do you do with your own money? What does your money look like? What kind of positions are you sitting in before you take my money and go fuck it up too?
Yeah, capabilities are very important when you're evaluating a firm, an individual, and truly what it is that they're doing. I try to do what a Fortune 100 company is going to do. I try to do what a bank's doing with their money, right? Like that's, you know, why recreate the wheel, right?
Right. So anyway, guys, check out StreetCop.com for upcoming classes. And again, thank you to Jeremy. You could check him out at Tomorrow Now.
Tomorrow Now, new site coming, and then also SuarezPlanningTeam.com.
Yeah. SuarezPlanningTeam.com. Spell that for everybody.
SuarezPlanningTeam.com. PlanningTeam.com. Yep.
His social game's a little weak.
So weak.
So I don't know if he spends all his time working with people's money. His Instagram game's kind of dog shit compared to us. But it is what it is, guys. He's worth the time, energy, and effort. And good luck with anything. And reach out to us if you want to get in contact with him as well. Without further ado, thank you for being here, my brother.
Thank you.
All right. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.